Wilmot Goes Bananas by P.G. Bell. Wilmot straightened his school blazer, checked his tie, and took a nervous breath before rapping smartly on the front door of the Belle de Loin's cab. "At last," came Stonker's voice from inside. "Honestly, Bernard, of all the days to be late." The door opened. Above his enormous moustache, Stonker's features were set in a frown, which only deepened as he looked down and saw Wilmot.
"You're not Bernard," he said.
"No, Mr. Stonker, I'm..."
"Where's Bernard?"
Stonker peered over Wilmot's head.
"He's supposed to be here by now. The express can't run without her postmaster. Especially not today. We've got a priority package."
"I know," said Wilmot, standing on tiptoes in an attempt to recapture Stonker's attention. "But Dad, I mean Bernard, isn't well this morning. That's why he sent me." Stonker's eyebrows shot up in surprise, then crashed together again in suspicion.
"You're Bernard's little boy?"
"Yes," said Wilmot, too excited to quibble about the little boy remark. "Wilmot Grunt, at your service." He put his hand out. Stonker didn't take it.
"What's wrong with him?" he said.
"Shingles," said Wilmot. Stonker winced.
"Is it serious?"
"Yes," said Wilmot. "They fell off the roof and hit him as he stepped outside this morning. But there's no need to worry." He tugged at his lapel. "Because just before he passed out, he deputised me." He was unable to hide a slight blush of pride as Stonker leaned in to examine his deputy postie's badge. "I'm here to help."
"I see," said Stonker after a moment. "Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, my boy, but I think that blow to the head might have affected your father's judgment a little. I can't take a schoolboy on a delivery run."
"But I know everything there is to know about being a postie," said Wilmot. "I've studied all the training manuals. I've heard all the stories from Mum and Dad and the old guard. I'm an expert." He knew he was starting to sound desperate, but he couldn't help it. He was a deputy. He had a badge. Stonker's moustache twitched.
"How old are you, lad?"
146, sir," said Wilmot. "And you don't need to worry about me missing school. I've got a permission slip."
"Do you even know what we're delivering today?"
"I do," said Wilmot, trying to regain control of the conversation. "In fact, I took the liberty of visiting the sorting carriage on my way up here." He produced a small envelope from the pocket of his blazer. "Priority delivery for the Deputy Cogmeister's office in Autopolis. Tracked and signed for." Just for a second, Wilmot thought he detected the beginnings of a smile beneath Stonker's moustache.
"Your dad's always telling me you know your stuff," said Stonker. "He reckons you'll make a fine postie some day. I suppose we'll see if he's right."
He stepped aside to let Wilmot in. Wilmot fought to maintain an air of professionalism as the express left Trollville behind and plunged into the tunnel network, but it wasn't easy. "It's finally happening," he thought, as the howling darkness sucked at the window panes. "Everything I've ever dreamed of." Eventually, it was too much to contain. "It really is a huge honour to be here, Mr. Stonker," he burst out. "I always wanted to work on the express."
"Hmm?"
said Stonker, without looking round. His forehead was creased in concentration, and his hands danced over the controls at a dizzying pace.
"Can't talk now," he said. "Too much to do."
He snatched a pair of canvas gauntlets from the mantelpiece over the fireplace, pulled them on, and brushed past Wilmot, opening a steel hatch in the rear wall. Bananas spilled out of it onto the floor.
"Blast," he spat, scrabbling to pick them up.
"I can help," said Wilmot eagerly. A stray banana came to rest at his feet,
and he bent down to pick it up. Ouch! As he snatched his hand back, bright blue sparks arced between his fingers. Careful! Snapped Stonker. Arms already laden, he crouched down and retrieved the banana with a spare couple of fingers. Then he waddled crab-like to the fireplace and tossed them all onto the flames. They're a tad overripe, he said, removing the gloves and returning to the controls. Makes them more volatile. Sorry, said Wilmot, sucking at his smarting fingertips. Shouldn't you have a fireman for that?
Should do, said Stonker. Don't. Not since old Spod retired.
Oh, said Wilmot. Well, can't they replace him?
They tried, said Stonker. But it's long hours and low pay, so it's just me.
Wilmot watched him with even greater respect than before. The driver was never still, his whole body dancing back and forth in front of the controls, his hands reaching, twisting, pressing, cranking. It looked exhausting. Wilmot took the envelope out of his pocket again and weighed it between his fingers. He had never seen Autopolis for himself, but he had heard all about it. How the whole city was one giant machine in constant motion, filled with waltzing towers of brass and chrome, and populated with clockwork people. He could hardly wait to see it. A moment later, the express burst out of the tunnel into daylight, and Wilmot hurried to the nearest window to look outside. His excitement stalled. They hadn't reached Autopolis yet. Instead, the express was racing through the depths of a great forest, with huge mountain peaks visible beyond. The sun was sinking, painting their snow-capped tops a brilliant gold. He was about to ask where they were, but Stonker bustled past him again, en route to the banana hatch. Wilmot backed away to give him space, but in doing so, caught one of the controls with his elbow. There was a faint click. He jumped and spun around to look. The controls were a mess of pipes, wheels, levers and dials, and he had no idea which of them he had collided with. Then he saw the flashing red light. It was small and unlabeled, but it was blinking away insistently. Had it been doing that a moment ago? He couldn't be sure.
Mr. Stonker, he said nervously, I think something's gone a bit wrong.
I'll say, said Stonker.
There was a tinny echo to his voice all of a sudden, and when Wilmot turned, he saw that Stonker was half in and half out of the hatch, his feet wiggling in the air.
There's a banana blockage, Stonker called. I'm just trying to clear it.
To Wilmot's horror, a second red light was now flashing. He searched desperately for whatever he might have nudged, but there were so many little buttons, switches and cranks, and it could have been any of them.
I think I've got it, came Stonker's voice then. Pull me out, would you, lad? And be ready with a bucket. It's about to start raining bananas.
Wilmot knew he had to act fast. Gulping, he reached for the nearest switch and flicked it. The two red lights winked out. With a sigh of relief, he snatched up an old tin bucket from beside the fireplace, ran to the hatch, and took hold of Stonker's legs.
That's it, called Stonker, as Wilmot pulled. Nearly there!
Wilmot leaned back, putting his whole weight into the effort. All of a sudden, Stonker popped from the hatch like a cork from a bottle. He landed on top of Wilmot, and a small avalanche of bananas rained down on them both.
Jolly good show, that man, said Stonker, dusting himself down. This job really does need someone with longer arms than mine, and... Great Scott!
He pointed past Wilmot. Wilmot turned, then drew back in horror. The controls were a mass of blazing red lights.
What's wrong? He gasped, as Stonker flew across the cab. Can you fix it?
Stonker flipped switches, pressed buttons, and one by one the lights winked out. But as they did, the express began to slow, venting yellow steam from between her great driving wheels. Wilmot watched it gust past the windows. In less than a minute, the train had crawled to a complete halt.
That was close, said Stonker, leaning against the brake lever. We almost went up like a rocket.
He looked closely at Wilmot.
I don't suppose you saw what happened, did you? Wilmot's nose blushed a violent red. He wanted to turn and run, but then he touched the badge pinned to his chest and felt a little calmer. "I'm sorry, Mr. Stonker," he said quietly. "I knocked the controls by mistake. I thought I'd fixed it, but I just made it worse." He hung his head so he didn't have to meet Stonker's hard stare.
"The first rule of any machine, my boy, if you don't know what a button's for, don't touch it." He sighed. "Now let's crack on, or this delivery will be late."
Wilmot looked up, feeling a flicker of hope. "I'm not in trouble?"
"Of course you're in trouble," said Stonker. "You almost blew us all to atoms. But hashing it out now won't get the job done any faster."
He patted the mantelpiece.
"I had to shut the old girl down completely to avoid a meltdown. She needs starting again from scratch."
"And how do we do that?" asked Wilmot.
"We don't," said Stonker. "I do."
"Of course," mumbled Wilmot, feeling the tips of his ears flush with shame. "I understand."
"I'll need a bucket full of water, though," reflected Stonker. "Perhaps you could see to that."
"No problem," Wilmot beamed. It was such a relief to be given the chance to help and put his mistake behind him. He would prove that he had what it took to join the impossible Postal Express and make his parents proud. "I'll be right back."
"Don't get lost," Stonker called, as Wilmot hurried out of the cab.
Wilmot spent a minute beside the tracks, scanning the tree line for any sign of a stream, but the shadows beneath the canopy were too deep for him to see much. Nor could he hear anything besides the murmur of the breeze in the branches. It sounded like a thousand whispering voices, and Wilmot got the disconcerting sense that they were all whispering about him. He felt watched, although he was quite alone. A little too alone, frankly. "Come rain, shine, or meteor shower," he recited, "the impossible Postal Express will deliver." That meant he had to do whatever was necessary to get the express moving again. And if that meant walking alone into this gloomy forest with nothing but his rusty banana bucket, then so be it. He stepped off the tracks and into the shadows. A watery, bottle-green light filtered down through the leaves, and the ground was littered with rocks and fallen branches that threatened to trip him. Thick patches of moss muffled his footsteps, adding to the heavy silence that pressed in around him. It felt like being underwater. Which is why he wasn't entirely surprised when a fish swam past his face. It was a small fish, just a few centimetres long, and it paused to goggle at him with one unblinking eye before darting off through the air between the trees. It left a faint ripple of light behind it as it went, a band of shifting rainbow colours that quickly faded. "Gosh," said Wilmot to no one in particular. "That's a bit different." Entranced, he hurried after it. It was easy to keep up. The fish wasn't swimming very quickly, and the trail of light it left behind made a clear path for him to follow. This was the life of a postie. He was so captivated by the colours that he barely even noticed the rest of the forest growing darker around him. At last, the fish led him to a small cave. It wheeled around the entrance, darting in, then darting out again. It seemed uncertain about something. "Is this where you live?" said Wilmot, stepping up to the lip of the cave and peering in. The darkness inside was absolute. "Were you trying to show me something?" As if at some unspoken signal, the fish suddenly sped off between the trees and out of sight. "What?" Wilmot began. But then tentacles erupted from the forest floor, plucked him up, and tossed him head first into the depths of the cave. As the cave mouth slammed shut, and Wilmot slid helplessly down into what he now realised was an enormous gullet, all he could think was, "But what about my delivery?" "A giant land squid," he said to himself, as he sat in the damp, burbling darkness of the creature's innards. "Just like the one that ate great-uncle Frank. What are the chances?" More to the point, what were his chances, he wondered. Warm digestive juices were seeping into his shoes,
and a gust of something very smelly stirred the air around him, making him cough. Probably not brilliant, he decided. For the first time since boarding the express, he wished he was back in Trollville. The thought made him feel pretty wretched. He had only ever wanted to be a postie, and already, on his very first delivery, he was willing to trade it all in for a little safety and comfort. He was sure this wasn't how his dad had felt when he was cornered by carnivorous centipedes in the Temple of Sharma, or when he had scaled the west face of Magog the Mountain Giant with just a feather duster for protection. Was it? But the truth was, Wilmot was scared, and there was nothing he could do to help it. And almost worse than that, he was ashamed. He had failed. Thanks to him, the express had stalled, and the special delivery was never going to make it. Instead, it was in his pocket, inside a squid, lost in a forest. He had let everyone down. "I suppose this is what rock bottom feels like," he said. "At least things can't get any worse." In the darkness nearby, something growled. Wilmot sat bolt upright. Perhaps it was just the squid's stomach rumbling. But then he heard something splash through the stomach juices towards him. It sounded big. "Stay back," he cried. "I've got a bucket, and I'm not afraid to use it." "Growth," came the response. He grabbed the bucket and raised it like a shield. To his surprise, something shifted inside it. He reached in, hoping it was something hard and heavy he could use to defend himself, but got a shock as a bright blue spark crawled up his fingers. It was a fusion banana. It must have fallen into the bucket when he had pulled Mr. Stonker out of the hatch. Now its stuttering glow illuminated the confines of the squid's stomach walls, the strings of mucus dripping from the ceiling, and the muzzle of the large brown bear that was staring at him. "Ah!" Wilmot recoiled. "Please don't eat me," he said. "I don't think I could handle it twice in one day." "Rumph!" snorted the bear, reaching out and swatting the bucket aside with a huge paw. Wilmot yelped and thrust the banana forward, hoping the crackles of blue energy would be enough to keep the animal at bay. "If you try anything, this will blow us both to pieces," he said, trying to sound braver than he felt. "It's overripe and terribly unstable." "Rumph!" said the bear, cocking its head to one side. Very slowly, Wilmot lowered the banana to his side. "Sorry, my ursine's a bit rusty," he said. "But did you just say you can get us both out of here?"
"Rumph!"
The bear nodded and held out its paws. Still a little nervous, Wilmot handed over the banana. "Careful," he said. "If the skin splits, it'll go off."
"Rumph!"
said the bear.
"Rumph, grumph, rumph."
"I'm not sure," said Wilmot, frowning. "I'll have to check the label. Hang on." He removed his blazer and inspected the lining. "Why, yes, it is machine washable," he said. "Why do you ask?" With a smile that exposed its wickedly sharp teeth, the bear slipped the banana down one side with a claw and tossed it deep into the recesses of the squid's stomach. "What are you doing?" Wilmot cried. Blue flames licked at the darkness. The pool of stomach juices fizzed and churned, and the spongy stomach lining beneath their feet began to tremble. "You're going to blow us both to pieces!" The bear said nothing, but scooped him up in its mighty arms and held him tight. There was a flash, a cacophonous boom, and a wave of heat and pressure that blasted them both off their feet and hurled them through the air. Wilmot had his eyes tight shut, so he didn't see anything until he and the bear landed in a heap of moss and old leaves. He scrambled to his feet and realised that they were back outside, about 10 metres from the squid's mossy beak. The creature belched a cloud of blue fire, and its tentacles writhed as it burrowed backwards into the ground. Seconds later, it was gone. "Wow," said Wilmot, turning to the bear, which was dusting itself down. "Nuclear heartburn. I didn't think that would work."
"Ruff,"
said the bear. "Oh," said Wilmot. "You didn't either. I see." He straightened his blazer and cleared his throat.
Well, thank you very much. I'm Wilmot. He put out his hand. I'm with the Impossible Postal Express. If there's anything I can do in return...
Rolf,
said the bear, shaking his hand. Oh, it's very nice to meet you, Ursel, he said. And yes, I'm sure we can offer you a lift. A bear? Whispered Stonker, as the express left the forest behind and raced back into the tunnel network. Are you sure this is a good idea? In the corner of the cab, Ursel was trying to squeeze her hindquarters into the old armchair, without success. It's the least we can do, said Wilmot. If it wasn't for her, our delivery would still be inside a squid. And so would I. Stonker had the good sense to look embarrassed. Yes, look. I'm terribly sorry about that. I shouldn't have pretended I needed water. I just wanted a bit of peace and quiet while I got the bell up and running again. I never would have sent you if I'd known it would be dangerous. Wilmot pursed his lips. He supposed he should be angry, but now that he was safely back in the cab, he mostly felt relieved. Perhaps he didn't have to let Stonker know that right away, though. I won't tell my parents if you don't mention that I knocked the controls, he said at last. I can't say fairer than that, said Stonker. Deal. As they shook hands, Ursel abandoned her efforts to squeeze into the chair.
Frumph, grumph, she said.
Stonker approached her and cleared his throat. Welcome aboard, he shouted. Very glad to meet you. He smiled and nodded enthusiastically.
Grumph,
said Ursel, looking at Wilmot. She wants to know if there's something wrong with you, said Wilmot.
Just trying to be polite, said Stonker, bristling. Perhaps one of us had better learn the language, hmm?
Rumph,
said Ursel, and jabbed Stonker in the chest. She agrees, said Wilmot, trying not to smile too much.
Jolly good, said Stonker, who clearly thought the matter settled. Now let's see if we can make up some lost time. We've still got a delivery to make.
Grum,
said Ursel. She wants to know if there's anything she can do to help, said Wilmot. Stonker looked back at her from the controls, and a thoughtful look came over his face.
She's got good long arms, he mused, and we know she can handle her bananas.
He turned to address Ursel directly.
Tell me, my dear, have you ever fancied a job on the railways?
Wilmot was out of breath. Like most structures in Autopolis, the office of the Deputy Cogmeister was as much a machine as a building, and was currently making its stately passage through the city on a river of enormous ball bearings. Wilmot had had to run to catch it.
"Special delivery!" he gasped, and proffered the envelope.
"Ah, yes," said the clockwork man behind the reception desk with a sigh of old pneumatics. "The Deputy Cogmeister has been expecting this, and I see that you are precisely on time. We appreciate punctuality in the Clockwork Kingdom." Wilmot brightened a little at these words.
All part of the service, he said. Could you sign here, please?
He pulled the form from inside his squid slime-coated blazer and passed it over. The tip of the clockwork man's index finger flipped open and the nib of a fountain pen emerged. He signed with a flourish.
Will there be anything else, young man?
No, thank you, said Wilmot. Then, wanting the moment to last just a little longer, he said,
This is my very first delivery, you know.
Indeed. The clockwork man's chrome eyebrows tilted upwards in polite surprise. Then I'd say your career is off to a very good start, wouldn't you? The words lifted Wilmot onto the balls of his feet, and he rocked happily to and fro.
Why, yes, he said, beaming. Yes, I suppose it is.
Back outside, the city of Autopolis whirred and clanked in an endless confusion of gargantuan parts, venting steam and bolts of electricity into the bronze sky. It was deafening and disorientating and every bit as marvellous as Wilmot had hoped. A very good start indeed, he said, as he turned and made his way through the chaos back to the waiting express.